Welcome to the New Life Live podcast. We hope to provide help and hope in your life through God's Word, counselors, and psychologists as we answer questions from listeners who call with the challenges of life. Let's go to today's episode.
Well, hello. Welcome to New Life Live. I'm your host, Brian Perez, on this Patriots Day edition of the show. We are here today with Dr. Jill Hubbard. She's a clinical psychologist and also licensed marriage and family therapist, Chris Williams. Thanks, you guys, for being here today. And Dr. Jill, what's on your mind to start us off today?
I can't not talk about 9/11 today.
Yeah.
I think we just kind of owe it to the day to at least acknowledge it. And here we are. I can't believe it's been 25 years.
25 years, yeah.
25 years. And so many, like, young people. I know my son was 6 weeks old when it happened. So 25 years, or even in my daughter, you know, was like in her, like 4 or 5 when it happened. They don't remember. They don't have a vivid memory of it. And so it's just so important that we acknowledge it and that we do remember. And we don't want to be desensitized to the evil that was perpetrated.
Yeah.
And however you look at it, I know there's all different kinds of theories and conspiracies and thoughts about it. But the truth is, real people died that day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And real people tried to save people from dying that day. And that we remember and try to remember them well, I think, is so important. And we honor not to revere or to, set it up as something more than it is. But we also, we remember so we don't repeat it.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It's important to do that. And I think, you know, all through history, through biblical times, Old Testament times, God had us build altars, had the people build altars to memorialize a spot. And I always think about, you know, in the Old Testament, walking along and you see a pile of stones. Like, did they label it? You know, what did they do? But that they did that to honor a situation, a time, to remember what God had done in the midst of difficult times. And one thing in Old Testament tradition is that they were to pass on the stories.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, one of the problems when the Israelites, if I do say so myself, when they were traveling through the desert and meandering, is they didn't pass on some of the traditions as they once did. They didn't celebrate some of the festivals and things as they once did because they were on the move. And so I think in their wandering, their memories were also kind of meandering as well with them. And it cost them greatly. So I think, you know, and there's some people say, well, who wants to remember really horrible things? Well, we don't always want to remember the details. Or if we take it on a personal level, people who have had their own 9/11 tragedy in their lives. Yeah, remembering every detail is pretty painful. But we, you know, to be able to remember it also honors that part of you that lived through it.
Yes.
So if we forget it, it's like we're telling the child part of us, it didn't matter. Just pretend. Just go on. Or the young person. We're telling that part of us that struggled that no one cares about that anymore. You just need to, you know, move on. And so for us to pause and reflect and say, no, we do care about it. We care about all those people that lost a loved one and who suffered greatly and the hit it did to our nation. And so today, you know, to pause and to maybe have some new understanding, but that doesn't mean we change or we rewrite history.
Yep,
so we need to remember well.
That's right.
All right. We will be back right here on New Life Live.
To find out more information about New Life or to order any of the resources mentioned on today's program, call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. Now back to New Life Live.
We are back on New Life Live. Thanks so much for joining us today. Brian Perez here with Dr. Jill Hubbard and Chris Williams. Chris, did you want to comment on what Jill was talking about?
Yeah, you know, thank you, Jill, for that so much, because I've been reflecting a lot in these last 25 years and reflecting actually on what it was like. It was actually 1 month before, a little bit more than a month before Ember and I got married. And what that season of life was like. And one of the things that I remember about 9/11, beyond the tragedy, because that, I mean, when you live through it, it was so surreal, so out of body. Couldn't believe that it was happening. And as things were, as news was coming out about different planes and different threats, and it was just such a time of uncertainty, uneasiness, grief. And it was a time that I distinctly remember that we were really just Americans at that point in time. That our divisions and our disagreements and our different perspectives and beliefs were fading away into this really, really strong sense of solidarity. And I mean, I kind of get a little bit choked up about it right now, that we've lost the solidarity. That remembering it is that we really do want our neighbor to be okay. We really do want our fellow citizens to be okay. And obviously, as Christians, it's not just about Americans, but at least we can start here in our home, and that we... That hating each other didn't make much sense that day.
No, not at all. Right. And when you're rescuing people, you're not asking them what they think about, you know, issues or beliefs.
And so I believe that for me, what's really important is that remembering the solidarity, remembering that.
So the good that came out of it.
There is good that comes out of it. You know, there is a sense of, like I say, about grief and tragedy, one of the maybe it's an unwelcomed gift, but one of the gifts it gives is a sense of what is most important. You and I, we are what's most important. You know, the well-being of our neighbor and the safety of our neighbor, that's what's important. And I'm just, you know, maybe it's for me before it's any, before it's for anyone else. But today, my remembrance is the remembering that we may have different beliefs, we may have different perspectives, but I am for my fellow American. I am for the well-being of my neighbor. And obviously that goes at the very, very heart of what we believe as Christians, is for the well-being of those around us, to love our neighbors as ourselves, to even when it comes to our enemies, pray for those who persecute us, you know, wish well for our enemies, which is so counter. But I just, I really believe that there was a deep heart collective, it was in the ethos, it was in the water of that solidarity.
I think that that is one of the great things that came out of it, and why we need to remember, because you see in just 25 years how we get away from that. And we start hating one another, and we don't see ourselves as humanity together, right? And that people are disposable, and that that's not true.
I remember 9/11 was on a Tuesday, and the next day, 9/12 was a Wednesday. Went to a midweek service at my church. It was packed. I mean, I got there a couple of minutes late because I couldn't find a place to park. Finally go inside, no place to sit. And it continued like that for a few weeks, including Sundays. But then little by little, people just started to, I don't know what it is. Well, people
things get normalized. I mean, you do go back to normal life over time. But I think the impact of that is important. Obviously, we can't sustain that constantly. But I think holding on to the, you know, that's why we commemorate it every year. We talk about it because it's still, a lot of us are living that lived through it. It's not like World War One, and we still commemorate that, that we don't remember. We're here, and so it's our job to pass on the stories.
I think so. Absolutely.
Were either of you already in practice then?
Yes.
Did you get people coming in? Did you get?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, in fact, that day I was supposed to meet with a colleague and introduce my baby to her, and she happened to be from New Jersey and called me up. She was the person who told me and said, we're not meeting today. I'm like, why? What happened? She goes, turn on your TV. So I was in practice. And, yeah, people, you know, it was so far out of our control and our normal sense of safety. And we've had an illusion here, I think, in this country, that those kinds of things don't happen on our shores.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I think it was the first time where we felt really vulnerable.
Yeah. Well, and for me, there's two things that marked my early career, because my first career was as a young adults pastor. And so I was pastoring in Colorado when Columbine happened.
Right.
And so never forget that April 20th day.
Yeah.
And then similarly at 9/11, I think ultimately they actually had shaping and formative experiences for me, ultimately entering into the therapeutic space. But again, I just remember the sense of your own sense of helplessness or hopelessness but also the, on the other side of that coin, the great need for shared experiences, for each other, for a strong, loving presence. And that goes back to why I think churches get packed in that, in these times, is because we need a place to share the experiences.
And to kind of make sense of it.
Yeah,
right?
Absolutely.
There's got to be a purpose, you know.
Beyond
ourselves.
Tragedy.
Yeah.
Yeah, you mentioned Columbine, and I think of everything else that has happened since 9/11. And even if, I mean, school shootings and movie theater shootings. I mean, just a few weeks ago, the In-N-Out Burger in Idaho.
Oh, yeah.
And just all these things that people are going through. There's just the sense of, I'm not safe anymore.
Right.
I can't even go to my
Palisade
favorite.
Palisade fires.
Yes,
right?
Yes, fires and everything. And people just have that sense of nothing's normal anymore. What is normal? How do I keep dealing with life? And some people, it's just despair. And the news cycle constantly telling us about something else that's going on. And I think we think that this is all new, but I wonder, has it been going on for a really long time? But it's because of the way, I mean, we get pinged on our phone every time some disaster happens somewhere, and we're just thinking that it's just out of control. But I think it's just the news cycle, social media. We have more access to it.
Yeah, we have more access to I was reading something. This was a couple of years ago. I was reading something that we have more access to information in a single day than what a person 150 years ago had access to in 150 years.
Wow.
So
that puts it in perspective.
Yeah. So, so, you know, again, if I wanted to, even as a kid, if I wanted to know something, an encyclopedia was something. Like, you know, in newspaper, all of those sort of things, where we have milliseconds to get all of that information now.
Yeah,
I think the other thing, and there's so many, I can play armchair diagnosis all day long. However, I've seen it over and over and over and over again, is that we are dealing with cultural and what I'd even say occupational hazards all around us. The information that we are fed is designed because it will get us to act the quickest. This is actually neurology. Part of our brain that is in survival mode, our amygdala, operates at about 4 billion bytes per second. Our prefrontal cortex operates at about 4 million bytes per second. That's the difference between going 4,000 miles an hour and 4 miles an hour. So if you want a person to make a decision really, really quickly without having to think about it, you create a threat. It activates that survival part of the brain. So news media is not designed to get you to think rationally. It's designed to think to get you to think scaredly, fearfully. We are groomed towards fear and outrage. And microdosed it over and over and over again.
And our nervous systems are shot as a result.
I will never forget. I was in Nashville doing a presentation on trauma, the impacts of trauma long term, on this model that I had developed. It's based on getting stuck in cycles of fear and anger, and through our pain. And so, and then how it makes horrible decisions and rash decisions and different things like that. And I remember afterwards, a media guy that there with a media consulting company came up to me and was like, oh my goodness, you just described how we get people to get clicks.
Oh.
And lo and behold, he revealed to me that their biggest clients, and I know that this could maybe get, one started with an FOX and the other one started with a CNN. They were the same company that was consulting the titles on their online articles for both organizations.
Really?
And I'm like, wow.
Hmm.
Wow. Okay. So our well-being is not in their best interest.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's an awful thing to think
about. Yeah. No, it is.
And now I'm getting traumatized over that.
I'm so sorry. Yeah. No, I'm so sorry.
No, because we put so much stock into what's out there.
Yeah.
And both sides blame the other side of creating fake news and everything mm-hmm. else. But it's, man, it's just designed to constantly have us enraged and not trusting our neighbor.
Yeah.
And just mm-hmm. wondering what's going on out there. And it's just awful.
Yeah.
Makes me want to just go back to the Bible.
Great idea.
It's never changing.
Well,
it's living, breathing word.
You know, friends, this is really where I'm just like, man, I love the fact that I was fortunate enough to be born as an American and grow up in America. But one of the things I have to, this is just for me, I have to come back to all the time. My faith is not in a country, in a political
right.
party, or definitely not a politician. My faith mm-hmm. is in Christ. And I don't want to oversimplify that.
No.
But I do want to oversimplify it for myself.
Mm-hmm.
Because oftentimes, like maybe 9/11 is a time where we sit back and be like, let's put down our phones, let's put down our outrage, and maybe let's go bake cookies for that neighbor that we're in conflict with and say, mm-hmm. hey, today, you know, we're together. If you're doing good, my life is better.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And that's the contrast. You know, these horrible, horrific things happen, but just like we were saying, is that there's good that can come out of it.
Absolutely.
So be part of the good.
Absolutely. Yep. Mm-hmm.
We talked about this last time we were on the show together about the well-being of our neighbor. We mentioned right now on this show, mm-hmm. too. And Chris, you gave the example of the woman that you were on a plane with. She was mm-hmm. having a panic attack. You told her to reach over and mm-hmm. grab your wrist. And that was just one of those, oh, I saw, Jill, I saw you reach over for your cup.
No,
I'm not, sure.
No, I'm not grabbing Chris's his wrist again.
Yeah. But it just reminded me that, and we also talked about the fact that people are hurting, our neighbors are hurting, mm-hmm. and not just to do that, you know, the cliche, if there's anything I can do for you, let me
right.
know, but to actually reach out and
well,
get to
know
people.
Well, which takes slowing down, which we were talking about in panic attacks,
we have no
you have
time
to slow down the breathing.
Because we're constantly
right, we're frenetic.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
And let me bring that back
frenetic,
to,
perfect word.
Yes, panic attacks operate at 4,000 miles an hour.
Mm-hmm.
Calm, rational thinking operate at 4 miles an hour.
Yeah.
Which is basically, it's a fast pace, but that's walking speed.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And I oftentimes use this with my clients that are struggling with anxiety, including myself,
mm-hmm.
is that there is this unbelievable wisdom in this incredibly deep, theoretical, metaphorical, philosophical movie called Cars.
Okay.
Yes.
Where Doc tells Lightning McQueen this: if you want to go faster, you've got to learn how to slow down.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing is more true of that than how God has designed our best brain and our best brain activity.
Yeah.
This is true. Thanks so much for watching us and listening today on New Life Live. We're going to take a quick break. And we thank you for supporting us financially and by praying for us and for the people who call in and share what's going on in their lives. You're making a difference with your prayers and your financial support. You can learn more at newlife.com. We'll be right back.
To
find out more information about New Life or to order any of the resources mentioned on today's program, visit newlife.com. Now back to New Life Live.
Hey, so you know that you can call us when we're in the studio at 1-800-229-3000, but we've also got a couple of ways that you can reach out to us. If you can't call in, you can leave us a voicemail or send us an email, and the instructions on how to do everything are on our website, newlife.com/radio, because it's a different phone number that you would leave your voicemail at. And the email address, it's actually a form that you fill out now, and that gets to us. Here's one that Lynn sent in from Santa Barbara. She listens to the New Life Live podcast. Thank you, Lynn, for listening to the podcast. She says, I'm so angry and sad of hearing my friend handling her situation. Am I a terrible friend if I tell her? Am I hiding if I don't? Here's the backstory. Lynn says, I have a best friend of 40 years. She's been in a miserable marriage for the last 15 plus years. 10 years with known infidelity. She does not confront her husband or address it openly with her three kids. Two are now college age. One is in high school. They sleep in separate rooms. They've been doing that for the last 10 years. He often stays at work until 2 a.m. She considers her husband a workaholic, and he is. He has a crazy, demanding job, and they are multiple hundreds of thousands of dollars in debt. I've helped by giving a large sum of money toward the debt as a gift. I used to plan to pay all the debt off, but my own therapy has helped me stop trying to fix it. My friend is saying she is sad that when I went through a challenging thing myself, I didn't let her in on it until it was over. She is offended that I don't see her as able to have space for me, for my emotional needs. She's also a therapist, now helping 30 clients per week, not to mention she often overfunctions for her children. It's hard to watch. She complains that I don't see her in as good of light compared to how she sees herself. I can't promise to hold in high regard, remaining miserable for decades. However, I don't harp on anything ever. I just have limits to my ability to be close to this situation. What are your thoughts? Who wants to go first? Jill?
Wow. So they've been friends for 40 years. And the friend is a therapist, mm-hmm. So the friend helps a lot of other people, but this Lynn is close enough to her where she gets to see kind of behind the curtain, right, mm-hmm. and sees what's really going on. And I think to see someone choosing to maintain a life that is less than desirable, right, in fact, hurtful, is painful. Did Lynn say that she has shared that with her, that it's painful for her to watch?
I think she wants to know if she's a terrible friend, if she tells her this, or is she hiding if she doesn't?
No, I think if this person's a therapist, she may be sensing, right? She is sensing some of the gap that Lynn isn't sharing as much. And I think it would... I would lean more towards being honest about that. It's awful when you're in a relationship and you know something's off or there's an imbalance and yet you can't quite put your finger mm-hmm. on it. And so if they've been friends this long and Lynn is a good enough friend where, wow, she's given her money mm-hmm. and done different things like that. I think to lovingly and kindly let her friend know that it is painful to watch. Now, that being said, it's important to not, I think, lean in a judgmental, hypercritical way, because until you've walked in somebody's shoes, you may not understand why they would choose this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Disrupting, this infidelity's been going on. And it used to be, in ancient times, women lived with infidelity.
Yeah.
They knew it was going on, but they couldn't say anything because the lifestyle change was too great. I know people today who do the same thing. And women often have a fear, right? I can't tell you how many women have a fear of ending up as a bag lady or, of not being able, especially if they've stayed at home with kids, because you disrupt the family system that's been created, and you know, everyone's affected. And financially, I mean, they're already struggling. You know, you end up living on half or less. So there's reasons why people just kind of make these compromises. But I think that God could use Lynn to at least say, can we start a conversation about this? I haven't walked in your shoes. I don't understand it, and I don't understand how you could choose this. Mm-hmm. Help me understand.
Yeah.
Because I don't know how to come alongside you, and it makes me want to pull back.
Mm-hmm.
Any thoughts, Chris?
I completely agree, because it sounds like Lynn's friend lives a chaotic life.
Yeah.
And if he's a workaholic, well, by the way, she is as well. 30 clients a week. What, that's
right.
50,
that
yeah.
does sound really high.
That's yeah,
60
that's a lot.
Hours.
Like
that's,
for a therapist.
I'm telling
that's
you, like that's
beyond full time.
That's beyond full time.
Yeah.
And they're hundreds of thousands of dollars in debt. This just tells me that there is a lot of things that are out
of
control
yeah.
and chaotic. You don't want to put money into that because it's going to be a black hole.
No.
But the other aspect of that is that it's going to be hard, if not impossible, to be close to that, because for this chaotic system to exist, Lynn's friend has to be in deep denial. You can't be close to denial, because closeness requires transparency, requires intimacy, you know, and that's not possible in this situation. So there may be layers of boundaries and distancing that she needs to take in the relationship, because it quite honestly can be toxic,
right?
You know, and that toxin can be contagious.
But you can't just go away without saying anything.
You're true.
Every day we hear from people all over the world who are looking for hope. They've been lost in a relationship struggle, addiction, anxiety, depression, all kinds of ways. Wouldn't you love to be part of a rescue team? Don't miss your opportunity to be part of something that changes lives every single day, because everyone matters. Your generosity helps find them. And you know, we've seen God work in the lives of so many people over the years here at New Life, and we want to invite you to be part of what God is doing. 99 for the One is our partner program that you can give to the ministry on a monthly basis to make sure that we continue to reach out to the lost.
Call 1-800-NEW-LIFE, 1-800-639-5433, or newlife.com/99-for-one.
Join the mission, rescue the one, and restore the many.
To find out more information about New Life or to order any of the resources mentioned on today's program, call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. Now back to New Life Live.
All right, we are back here on New Life Live. My name is Brian Perez. I'm here with clinical psychologist Dr. Jill Hubbard and licensed marriage and family therapist Chris Williams. And you might have heard us mention the Hope Together conference that is happening next month. It's in Allen, Texas. It's also happening online. And we're really excited because Becky Brown, the president of New Life Ministry, she's one of our co-hosts. You hear her, you see her on the program a lot. And several other members of the New Life team are going to be part of Hope Together this year. If you've enjoyed New Life Live, this is a wonderful opportunity to spend 3 days learning alongside us and many other outstanding Christian leaders. Hope Together is happening October 1st through the 3rd in Allen, Texas, and online. You can find out more on their website, hopetogether.com. Let me give you a promo code. It saves you 20% on registration, NLM20. NLM, as in New Life Ministries, NLM20. Don't go putting like NLM70 thinking you'll get a 70% discount. 20 is the max. NLM20 to get that 20% discount. And again, it's coming up in just a few weeks. It's in Texas. If you can't be there in person, you can watch online. But register right now at hopetogether.com. All right. So here's another question that was submitted online at newlife.com/radio, which is one of the ways that you can get your question to us. It's not our favorite way, because we like talking to you when you call in to us here at New Life.
But we do answer them because they've taken the time.
Of course.
So we
Sarah in Omaha, Nebraska. She listens to the New Life Live podcast. She writes, "How do I go forward with my parents? They've had mental health challenges my whole life, and the biggest issue I think is emotional immaturity. And over the years, they have a pattern of getting mad and then not talking to people. It's always been that everyone else is supposed to be perfect and treat them perfect, and they can be rude and talk down to people, etc., and that's okay. But the minute anyone, doctors, family, neighbors, etc., does any little thing wrong toward them, they are offended and get mad. My kids have moved out on their own, and I called my mom to let her know where they moved, and after 8 months, she answered the phone, and she had zero interest. She said, "Oh, that's nice," and then started talking about the weather. And then we finished our conversation. That's the first time we had talked in months because she would never answer my calls or text messages. I don't know what I'm supposed to do going forward as a Christian. I'm trying to keep the door open and kind of keep in touch, but she literally had no desire to talk about what was going on in our lives or with the kids. Previously, she was in touch with them, but since she got mad about something now, I guess her love is conditional. "Do I have to keep trying to talk to her?" asks Sarah. "Do I try to invite her to holidays or gatherings, even though I know that her attitude and vibe will ruin it for the rest of us? How far do I have to go to keep trying to involve her when it's clear that her and my dad do not want to be involved? And what do I say to other people and my children who wonder why I don't have a relationship with my mom anymore after I had kept the relationship going for 25 years? I have no other explanation except the fact that she has mental illness issues and my dad is just going along with her. I've never had an emotional relationship with him either." Man, that is a lot.
That is a lot.
Yeah.
It is a lot.
I mean, there's a lot there. I think the most, where I would start, maybe the most important thing is the movement towards acceptance. Is that, especially when it comes to the closer the relationships are, especially parent-child, who we want and need our parent to be may not be the person that they can show up as. And, you know, I ask my clients all the time, it's like, okay, this person has shown you who they are for, let's say, you've been alive 56 years. So for 56 years, this is who they are. I think it's time to believe them.
Yes. You know, they keep telling you.
They keep telling you who they are over and over and over. But beyond that, what our hopes, and maybe there's glimpses that they've shown something different, whatever the case may be, but if this is, Sarah, if this is who your mom shows herself to be and your dad that goes along with it, when we start with the reality of the acceptance, it does mean that we're probably going to have to face some grief. It probably means we're going to have to face some real disappointment and hurt as a result of that. But when we move through that and get to our own sense of healing and security through that, what we're able to do is then put the relationship in your home court, not theirs. Meaning, like, you're not doing it for them because they don't have any interest. So if you want to reach out and invite them to something because you want to do that, great. If you don't, that's okay too. And on their side of the story, on their side of the relationship, whether you do or you don't will not make a difference. So you do it for yourself. And what you tell people is like, hey, you know, why don't you have a relationship? Well, I have a relationship with my parents on my terms, you know. Or because in
or relationships are two-way streets.
Absolutely.
Right? And I can't be both sides of the relationship.
That's good. Yeah. Yeah.
Right? Because sometimes that's what a child tries to do.
Yes, that's right.
Right? Is like, okay, I'm going to hit the ball to you. Now I'm going to run over to your side and I'm going to hit
the
back.
Ball, yeah.
Right? When what you're saying is they keep telling you who they are.
Yeah.
And with emotionally immature, you know, leaning towards mental illness people, if you don't get help in life, things get worse.
Yeah.
So they will become more, you know, entrenched in their distorted thinking and thoughts. It sounds like these parents are easily wounded and that they need everything to revolve around them and how they see things. Everybody else is wrong. They're right. So what you're saying is no matter what you do, Sarah, it's not going to be right.
It's not going to move the needle.
Yeah. It might be good to get my book, Forgiving Our Fathers and Mothers.
That would be great.
It goes into this where... Right. And so it's you deciding, okay, what type of person do you want to be, and be an honoring person that acknowledges that they hold the position of parents And you can even choose to invite them with some parameters around that. Like, this is what we're going to be doing for the holiday. I mean, let's say if their issue was drinking, we'd love for you to come. However, if you, you know, are drinking, then we will be asking you to leave, or, or we'd like you to come and not drink, or whatever the issue is, the best you can put parameters around it to minimize them being able to ruin an event. And then accepting what they decide to do. And it, it is hard when they want you to make them feel good. Right? And usually with mental illness like this, it's all about, well, what are you doing for me? Almost as if children are supposed to serve.
Well,
parents indefinitely.
Caretake the parents' emotional well-being.
But here's the other thing, and we don't know because we're not talking to Sarah. How old are parents? And, you know, is this a trend, which it sounds like it is, that it has been in place? But if it's getting worse, at what play does, one, drugs or alcohol, prescription medications, and dementia? Because with dementia, they start losing interest even more so in your life. Right? They have an inability to carry on both sides of the conversation. So they may tell you lots of things about them that even seem really dull and important. And why wouldn't you be interested in your grandchildren? As they start losing the ability to ask those questions and to have it register as important to them. So that's important to recognize, too.
I think that that's a really good point. And I think in the midst of all of that, you know, to protect yourself, Sarah, is that if going back to acceptance then creates new expectations, accurate expectations. I'm not calling my mom to express what how my kids are doing or what's up to their lives because she's not interested. So I'm no longer hurt by that. I just accept that as a baseline. And so I'm to check in, see if they're alive, see how they're doing, talk about the weather. Spend 15 minutes and be good to go.
That's so difficult, though.
It's very
difficult
to
that realization that you're not going to have that relationship with mom or dad. I mean, we get the calls all the time from mom and dad who want to have a relationship with their kids, and the kids want nothing to do with them. And this is like reverse.
And there are parents that are like that.
That
shut the kids out.
Now, one thing Sarah said is, I don't know what I'm supposed to do going forward as a Christian. And I think that adds something to it because Sarah's thinking, well, I'm supposed to love my neighbor. I'm supposed to honor my parents.
Well, that's where you, that's what I was saying. You become an honoring person. You honor them in the sense that you respect the role. So you don't completely cut off. But you recognize who they are and you grieve that and accept the limitations of the relationship.
That's spot on. And I just will reiterate, you need to get Jill's book, Forgiving Your Fathers and Mothers, and it really walks through this process very well.
Find it, Forgiving Your Fathers and
Mothers. Forgiving Your Fathers and Mothers.
Both of them.
Yes.
Dr. Jill Hubbard's book, available wherever you find your books. All right, we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back here on New Life Live. And Sarah, thank you so much for sending in your question through newlife.com/radio. You can send us a question, too. Go to newlife.com/radio to find out how. We'll be right back.
To find out more information about New Life or to order any of the resources mentioned on today's program, visit newlife.com. Now back to New Life Live.
If you benefit from what you hear here on New Life Live, we invite you to join us by becoming one of our financial supporters. You can either become a monthly donator or a donor, I should say, donator. I just made up a word.
Monthly donor. It, though. It makes sense.
Well, it kind of makes sense. But a monthly donor or a one-time donation, they're all welcome. Large gifts, small gifts. You can find out more on our website, newlife.com, or you can call one of our friendly ministry service representatives at 1-800-NEW-LIFE. You can also text NLM to 28950 to make a one-time gift. But if you can become the monthly recurring giver through our 99 for the One partner program, that'd be great. You can learn more at newlife.com/99 for the One. or by calling 1-800-NEW-LIFE or text NLM to 28950. Well, the text is if you want to make a one-time gift, but if you can become a monthly supporter, that would be incredible.
Which is a regular donator.
Yes.
So there's your word.
There's my word again. Thank you, Jill. Now, we mentioned when we were reading Sarah's question, when we were answering Sarah's question about the relationship she has with her parents or lack of relationship. And Jill, you mentioned that it could be maybe the beginning stages of dementia.
Right. Because I think it comes on and you don't expect that because maybe they've been cantankerous for a while or difficult. And so you think it's more of the same.
Yeah.
And especially when you're around someone a lot ongoing, you don't realize. And so then when they start acting different or indifferent, it can be a little bit puzzling. And it's and I think it's just one of the last things we think about. I remember I told a story probably years ago. I had a neighbor who lived behind me. And, you know, we would often exchange and talk. And then one day I went out to take the trash out and she looked at me with the dirtiest look, slammed her trash down and went in the house. I hadn't seen her in a while. And I'm like, oh, what did I do? Right. Well, come to find out, I mean, she died shortly after and she had dementia. She didn't know who I was.
Wow. Okay.
And there are different phases of dementia. There is a phase where they get really angry. And that is a really and combative and pushing away at caregivers. And that is a really difficult stage.
Yeah.
Often, though, that's followed by a really sweet stage. And so if you make it to that stage, that's much better and easier to deal with. But in the beginning, I think, you know, it's like we forget the medical piece. And especially as people are aging, you know, you think of your parents and you've had a lifelong relationship and you've had maybe lifelong struggles and dynamics. And so you forget that maybe there's decline happening. And I think we don't want to think that. We think we're going to have them forever.
Yeah.
And so, and they don't, you know, often they hide it as best they can.
Well,
right?
And I think it's really important that we continue the work of destigmatizing it so that we can do early interventions.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, discussions that we're having in our family around aging parents, around, you know, is that this is a reality. This could, you know, if especially if it runs in the family, we want to be able to get ahead of it. We want to be able to do medical interventions ahead of it. And so I think that that is really important to open up those conversations that, you know, if you're suffering from dementia, you are not a bad person.
No.
You know, there's something wrong happening to you, but there's nothing wrong with you.
I try to get behind the person's eyes and, you know, and talking about aging with older people in my life, you know, the fear of people, you know, kind of treating you as if you're already gone.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Because,
yeah.
Oh, now you're starting to get repetitive and not making a lot of sense. And so it's like you're already dead, right? Or kids, you know, kind of standing up and like taking charge. And people want to go out gradually, gracefully, with dignity. You know, you hear those words. They don't want to lose their independence. And so I think that as people get older, they try to hide these things as much as possible.
That makes,
so they're not treated differently.
Yeah.
Well, and I think really importantly, so that they don't lose some of their freedoms as well.
Absolutely.
You know,
because
no one wants their driver's license taken away. No one wants,
and I've seen it happen to people. Yeah. And it's scary for them.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Right.
Yep.
A Facebook friend of mine posted this recently, and so it was perfect timing that we're talking about this, but I think it was just something she shared from some other page, but it says, if I ever get dementia, I'd like my family to hang this wish list up on the wall where I live. I want them to remember these things. I don't know how many of these we have time to go through, but every time you enter the room, announce yourself. Hi, it's Brian. Never ask, do you know who I am? This causes anxiety.
Good one.
That's really good, yeah.
If I get dementia, I want my friends and family to embrace my reality. If I think my dead friend is still alive Or if I think we're visiting my parents for dinner, mm-hmm. let me believe those things. I'll be much happier for it. Mm-hmm. Somebody might, on that one there, people might say, yeah, but we need to, we can't be lying to them. Wouldn't that make things worse? What would you say?
No. Because they're not operating in the same
reality
yeah. orientation to yep. time and place that we are. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's awful to lose your mind.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so mm-hmm. I think, you know, the loving thing to do is to kind of assess the level of danger. There was a situation in our family years ago where someone kept leaving the house.
Oh,
and
yeah, yeah.
that was a safety issue. Well, they were going. They said they had to go and get an award. So what someone in our family did is we had a lunch. We invited some important people from the past, and we gave this person an award and honored them so that they didn't have to leave to go to the place where they thought they needed to go to get the award.
Mm-hmm.
There was no harm done.
Absolutely.
This person had been brilliant. This person, he deserved an award, right? For heaven's sake.
Yes.
So we made up an award.
I love it.
And he was so happy.
Yeah. Mm.
Mm-hmm. Right? And yep. so joy was brought to him and no harm was yeah. done. And yet it kept him safer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Here's a few more of these. If I get dementia and I'm sad or anxious, hold my hand and listen. Mm-hmm. Don't tell me that my feelings are unfounded. Mm-hmm. If I get dementia, I don't want to be treated like a child. Talk to me like the mm-hmm. adult that I am. If I get dementia, I still want to enjoy the things that I've always enjoyed. Help me find a way to exercise, read, and visit with friends. Ask me to tell you a story from the past.
Mm-hmm.
If I become agitated, take the time to figure out what's bothering me. Treat me the way you would want to be treated.
Mm-hmm.
That's key mm-hmm. right there.
Yeah, golden rule.
You just mentioned this a few minutes ago, Jill. Don't talk about me as if I'm not in the room.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's good. Yeah.
yeah. Because yeah. you could be in a room with someone and you know, four or five of you in the room and you're talking about the person, even though the person is in the room.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, that must be something.
Right.
I mean, we don't know what it's like personally. But
right.
Yeah.
And remember, you know, the brain is desperate to try to grab and figure out reality. So stories get conflated.
Yeah.
So you don't need to correct. You don't need to tell them they're lying. Right. It didn't happen that way.
Mm-hmm.
They're conflating stories. It's okay.
Yeah, they're all running together.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
For sure. Yeah, several more. Don't have time to go through all of them, but very
That's
helpful.
A great list.
It is, yeah.
That would be great to have access to that.
Yeah. Thanks so much for watching and listening to New Life Live today. Remember to pray for us and the people who call in and write in with their questions. And thank you for supporting us financially. You can find out all about us and keep up with what we're doing by following us on social media. Bookmark our website, newlife.com. Sign up for our newsletter. If you're watching right now on Facebook or YouTube, make sure to like today's video and subscribe to our page so that you'll get you'll always find out what we're doing, and it'll work the algorithm so that more people will find out more about what we do here at New Life. Have a great weekend. We'll talk to you Monday.
Thanks so much for listening. We hope something you heard will help you live in freedom today. If this content was helpful for you, we would love it if you would take a minute, leave a review, post about it, and rate it. Remember, we have resources and workshops online for you as you continue your journey. Go to newlife.com to find out more information. And thank you for being part of the New Life community. We know that God desires all of us to live a life of wholeness and healing, and we're so glad that you're here.